It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Fred, hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
What's going on? Are we on fire?
How you doing, Stanky Leg?
What's up, man?
High five from everyone.
Took it to the limit.
I have a horrible foot fetish.
Do you?
Let's go, Red Sox. Let's go, Red Sox.
Him and
he fired up.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
I follow Mark Wahlberg on Instagram. Every time I see Mark Wahlberg on Instagram, it's a new video about how he woke up earlier. I wake up at 7 a.m. and I get working out. I wake up at 7 a.m. and I carry kettlebells. I carry kettlebells from one end to the other. Gotta wake up at 6 a.m. Gotta wake up at 6 a.m. and you gotta push this thing that football guys push. And you gotta put the weights on it. And I gotta push it from one end to the other. Guys, woke up at 5 a.m. Woke up at 5 a.m. and I'm basically building sandcastles. I got a bunch of dumbbells, but I put them to the side. I woke up at 8 p.m. the day before. Hey, everybody, I woke up at 8 p.m. the day before. When'd you go to bed? I went to bed after that, but miraculously, I woke up earlier than that. What? I'm going back in time. Every time I go in bed, I go back in time, and I wake up earlier than when I went to bed. I'm the only guy who does it. Aspire to be better. I wake up before I go to sleep.
Everybody, good morning. We are the Toucher and Rich radio program. Who was that?
I forget what that comedian's name was. I saw that yesterday. It was the guy's pretty funny. He was on a really bad TV show. What was the show with Whitney Cummings? I think it was called Whitney.
Oh, I know who the guy is.
He was the guy who played his...
He played the molester in the episode of Workaholics.
Oh, I don't know.
He's got a beard and long hair.
Yeah, he's actually pretty funny. Yeah,
that's... Well, not at the roast. He's Justin Bieber's favorite comic, and he did a roast of Justin Bieber, and it was oof.
He's Justin Bieber's favorite comic?
Yes.
I know that. I saw the Justin Bieber roast. You know what's funny? I don't even remember him being it. I don't remember anything about the Justin Bieber roast, to be quite honest.
Well, he bombed. He was great in that Workaholics. Anyway, today at 7:30, you are going to hear live hockey from China. And then we all have bets. We have to get... So normally we would leave at 7:30. But today they're taking photographs of the staff, and they've been kind enough to move our time was going to be 10 o'clock, but since it's 9:30 or 7:30 that we're basically off the air, they've been kind enough to move our time a little earlier to like before 9. And Rich is very pessimistic about when we're going to get out of here.
Yeah, I think anytime you change something like that around, things can happen. Like I could see... where it takes a while to set up, and then they try to get us on, and the next thing you know, it's 9:30, and Bertrand and Zolak have not gotten their pictures taken, and they have to be on the air.
And they
have to
be on the air.
Well, we don't know if he's going to be here at 8. They say he's going to. Once again, they're moving everything.
No. He was supposed to get here at 8 in the first place.
He's supposed to get here at 8. Okay. Well,
then he has to unpack all his equipment, get the lighting right.
And they're doing
the backdrop right.
They're doing this in a kitchen, so I got to think that it's got to be fairly tough to... make it look like a...
See, I'm going with the kitchen being a little easier because of its lack of space. You can't go a whole hog in it. You can't go any Leibowitz in the thing.
In the kitchen?
Yeah. Like, I think the limited space makes it a little bit...
Yeah.
more difficult.
Okay, well,
you can go Robert Mapplethorpe in the thing, and we can put some whips in ourselves.
Here we go.
Okay. You guys know Robert Mapplethorpe?
Rock and roll, yes, I do.
Yes, indeed. He was good friends with Patti Smith. So that's what I'm going for. I'm going to go for
a
Maple-esque photograph. Okay.
So what, 7:30 is when we go live to Beijing? Is that
technically 7:35, but yes.
Okay.
Right in there.
All right.
So we're going to do that, because I would really like to do something this morning at 9:45. And it's going to take me, I would have to get out of here at 9 in order for that to happen.
Traffic and all. And the maze that you have to negotiate to go back.
Today the maze was something else. The phone that takes me here has a mind of its own. It's every day is a new adventure. Every day is a new adventure on how to get here. It's never getting home. I'm smart because I put in various destinations, and it takes me to them, and then so it can't take me that askew.
Oh, it's a step by step process instead of just punch a button and let's go.
Yeah, at a red light, I will put in a new thing.
Mm.
Ernie Bach is on line one. Ernie Bach, hello.
Whoa! Hey guys. Hey, good morning.
Hey, what's up?
Last time we spoke, I was a little morose.
Now, why was that again?
I don't remember. But this morning, listen, I'm here on Catalina Island. Do you guys know who Dexter Holland is?
Is that the guy for The Offspring?
Yes, that's the singer of The Offspring.
That's exactly right. So I'm in L.A., right, for the Emmys, because Dexter does some composing work for The Walking Dead, and he was up for an Emmy. Didn't win. Not important. We get in his chopper. He's a pilot, right? We get in this chopper. We're on Catalina. I'm watching Wayne's World. It's early in the morning. I thought I would call you guys and check in. Here's the thing. You guys, Fred, I got a bone to pick with you.
Now, why is that, Ernie?
Well, yesterday, you were busting on my friend Jim Harbaugh. Understandably so, I understand and everything, but I was also hanging out with my friend Charles Moore. He's a kind of an insane fisherman, and he reminded me of a time that you were at. Do you remember coming to a party at my house? You fell in my pool. Do you remember that?
No, I did not fall in your pool, but I remember someone did. Yes,
it was a former meteorologist here.
Well, Charles Moore has a different side of that story, I have to say. So you're telling me that's not true?
Well, that guy's just mad.
Well, I mean, he's insane, so I could see how he would get things wrong. But no, I did not fall into the pool at that party, no.
He told me you stepped in with your low-top Chuck Taylors right into my pool.
Well, nothing in that story is correct. I did not own a pair of low-cut Chuck Taylors. I wasn't priced.
Go check that. Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting you. Go ahead, man.
Well, I'll tell you what. Charlie Moore had a very flashy watch with diamonds in it. It was really, really classy.
Well, anyway, good for him. I wanted to check in and let you guys know that I'm not so sad anymore. You know, I'm out here on Catalina Island, and I'll be back, you know, as soon as, the sharks are gone, and I'll check in with you guys from the East Coast. But anyway, keep up the good work, and Fred, we're going to have another Thanksgiving soiree, and hopefully we can get you and Charles back together, and you guys can shake hands and, you know, make amends, and everything will be cool.
All right. Well, as long as I can, maybe he'll take me out to a little freshwater fish. Thank you, Mr. Ernie Bach.
Yeah, you'll no longer have the blues.
Day,
the great blues men of our time.
If I had to do, you know, they did a roast to Bruce Willis.
Uh-huh.
I would literally just sit there and
just play the Return of Bruno
and just stare at him
and just go, just I think 30 seconds into each song, just clip to the next one.
Yeah. Just go like, hey, everybody, Bruce Willis made an album, and then just play a song and stare directly at him.
I know you've heard Respect Yourself.
And that's exactly what I would have done. No, I wouldn't have said anything. I'd say Bruce Willis, you know, loves the blues and he made a blues record. And I'd hit play, and I would just stare at him.
I wonder if the Return of Bruno is, like, even available for purchase.
No, there's no way that's still in print.
They're out of print? Come on.
No, I bet, what about, like, you know, like, digitally? iTunes or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, but there's no way you could buy, like, a CD of it anymore. Maybe it's out on vinyl, just for all the collectors out there that want to keep it old school.
Because what is, like, the sixth track on the Bruce Willis Return of Bruno album sound like?
Him just playing harmonica and going nuts.
It's just saying, I got the blues. Okay, it's got to be available.
There was a good, like, 7 years where if you were a white actor, you were very into pseudo blues.
There is a live Return of Bruno concert online. It's him doing the album live.
Does he have sunglasses on?
No, he actually does not.
Oh, maybe that's like for like midway through.
Remember that song, Secret Agent Man?
Yeah.
That's the sixth track.
Okay, he has a cover of Sing. Oh my God, he's definitely honking on a bobo.
And the one right before that is Under the Boardwalk. The Boardwalk is the fifth track.
It's him with like...
that's what the world needed.
Yep,
it's
a cover.
With a bunch of like guys playing like saxophones and trumpets and horns. And then there's a drummer who looks like Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon with that hair. And then
and he's very anti-Semitic.
Then you just got Bruce Willis rocking on the stage, just honking on a bobo, and the place is going mild.
Can you imagine paying? There's no way people paid to go to that. That has to be something that they papered.
Hang on. Oh, no. And then he comes out for another song, and he's changed his persona, except this time he's backwards baseball hat and sunglasses guy.
Yeah, I told you.
There you go. He got the song. That's when he's the rapscallion.
Maybe he's rapping, actually, because he's got his hat cocked to the side and with sunglasses
on. Chances he's rapping because he has the hat sideways and the glasses, I would say 1,000,000%.
There was a time where, and you could see it in like Saturday Night Live and stuff, that if you were going to do something like in a sitcom where you rapped, you immediately put on sunglasses, even though that was something that like only Kumo D did. Like, you were like, no other rapper
or sunglasses.
Is rocking sunglasses. Like, why is sunglasses all of a sudden? Like, I'm super jazzy cool.
Right. You just cross your arms, maybe wear like one chain.
Apparently, it isn't his only album that he made.
He made more than one.
I'm looking at Amazon.com, Return of Bruno. Let's see here. Vinyl for $22.99.
Yeah, but that's not. Is it used?
It does not say. Oh, four new ones from $22.99.
Okay, four new ones. That means that someone like had an extra stock of them. Right.
The second album is called If It Don't Kill You, It Just Makes You Stronger. And
I wish I would have made that up.
And then the last one, you're really like classic Bruce Willis, the Universal Masters Collection.
Oh, it's the best of
the
Bruce
best
Willis.
Stuff. Oddly, that one's only from $4.11.
Oh boy,
I wonder how much that sold.
That I bet you'd be really sad if you found out.
No, I bet you'd be surprised.
Yeah, I know, and that would make you sad.
Oh yeah, okay. Like, well, it actually did.
All right, what's coming up, Rich? What are we going to talk about in about last night?
John Wallach throwing things at his television last night. That's what we're going to talk
about. Was he tweeting again?
No, he did not tweet last night. At least I did not see a tweet about it last night.
Okay, so we will have that for you. Oh, you did? You put a little something up there?
Yeah. Oh, you did? Oh, yeah, I did. Take a look. I'll have to check it out.
I did. We'll be right back. 98.5.
Toucher and Rich. Recapping what you missed, it's Toucher and Rich.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what happened last evening?
Well, what happened last night is brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. The flavors of fall everyone loves have finally dropped at Dunkin', so come in today for your flavor favorite like pumpkin and maple. Price of participation may vary. Worst bullpen ever.
And the pitch grounded back to Britton. This time he throws the second one onto first. Double play. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
Oh, they were all there. John Henry, Sam Kennedy, Tom Warner, all waiting for a champagne bath in the locker room after clinching the AL East, where they all be singing.
Let's go, yeah. Red Sox. Let's go.
What a party.
Tom Warner.
I want a champagne bath.
Could you please?
Could you fill the tub, please?
They kept showing them in the crowd. I'm like, oh, man.
I want to drink my own dirt.
Sam Kennedy and John Henry couldn't hold their excitement. They were standing up, like all giddy.
I am Jeeves. Make me erect. Pick me up.
Okay. In that sense.
Wow.
Well, that's
don't
good.
Have such. Oh, erect. Well, that requires a pulley system.
I'm sure it does. Well, unfortunately, the Red Sox delivered that old familiar tale. Team looks good for the first several innings, only for this disaster of a bullpen to blow it. Sox lose 3-2. There would be no clinching except for that of John Wallach's butt cheeks last night. And what makes this all worse is that the bullpen spoiled a strong performance by Nathan Eovaldi, who went 6 scoreless innings, allowed 2 hits, 2 walks, and struck out 5. But in the 7th, egads.
And the payoff. Swung on. There it goes. Deep right. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Salami.
Second deck. Neil Walker. The home run corker. He hits a 3-run blast to right. And the Yankees take a 3-1 lead.
No, a home run corker?
It doesn't rhyme. Don't even try. It doesn't rhyme.
Not even that. What does a home run corker mean?
I have no idea.
Well, you put a cork in my liniments.
Your liniments?
Liniments. The man comes by with liniments.
What are you saying there? Is that a word I don't know?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
It's things that you apply to your body.
Oh.
Jeez. We did not reign victorious today.
No, you guys did not.
This old Knickerbocker needs to get back to town.
Well, Neil Walker's 3-run home run of Ryan Brazier in the 7th inning was just the cherry on the diarrhea cake. Before that, Brandon Workman had walked 2 men and hung a 3-2 breaking ball to Walker, and them's the breaks. But hey, I don't have to tell you the Red Sox have a bullpen issue. We've been screaming it since May. And the stats, oh, John, the stats have not been good. The Red Sox have now blown an American League-leading 12 saves in 24 opportunities since the All-Star break.
No, there's nothing to see here. I'm sure it'll be just fine in a couple of weeks when it starts to matter.
You can't win a championship with this bullpen.
No,
can you?
You can't. You can't. I've been saying this for a while. You can't. And you know what? You know what their best eighth inning option, I think, is the guy who started last night.
I don't know
if Eovaldi can do it on back-to-back days because he's had a history of injury problems, but it seems to me that when he just throws as hard as he can and stops thinking, like Price did in the playoffs last year, he's really good. He can throw 100 miles an hour. So if you need him for one inning and you need him to strike a bunch of guys out, I mean, don't bring him in with runners on base, but if you start him in the eighth inning, maybe he's the guy that can actually get the ball to Kimbrel. But Brazier, as good a story as he is, you know, picked and picked and nibbled and finally had to come in with a fastball, and Walker put it in the second deck. I mean, it was a 1-0 game. If there was ever a game where Brazier was going to be relaxed, it was last night. The Red Sox had an 11.5 game lead on this team. And you would have thought Workman and Brazier were pitching in Game 7 of the World Series. Nobody on this roster who pitches out of the bullpen is ready for the playoffs except for Kimbrel.
Well,
they
can make moves. They can take people out of the rotation and put them in.
Other than Eovaldi, who? Other than Eovaldi, who's going to be effective out of the bullpen?
Well, that's all you need with your starting pitching. You just need an eighth inning guy.
Not convinced of that yet. We don't know if Sale's going to go beyond 6. We sure as hell know Eduardo Rodriguez isn't going to go beyond 6. Porcello's a coin flip, and you know David Price is a gigantic question mark. I mean, I'm
not as concerned as you are.
I am very concerned that it did against a good team. And by the way, last night's loss drops them to 15-16 against the other teams in the American League. They're going to make the playoffs. You can't sit there and tell me it's a lock the Red Sox are going to win the pennant this year.
Well, here's Alex Cora on this amazing crew of relievers he has after the game.
A week and a half to go here. How close do you think you are to figuring out who can help you in the bullpen and how?
When we get healthy, we get everybody healthy, we should be fine. I think, as you guys know, Barnes is a big part of what we're trying to do in the bullpen. You know, that's the guy that we've been relying the whole season. And when he comes back, then we know we got Craig, we got Barnsley, we got Ryan, and then we'll go from there.
And another thing that doesn't make Red Sox fans feel too great this morning is that yesterday was the return of Aaron Judge. He was asked how he felt after the game.
Felt like I never left. Everything felt good. Felt like my at-bats were good and seeing the ball well. That's all you can really ask for, you know, coming back after missing that many weeks. So I'm excited, you know, with the start. You know, we got the win. Just got to keep that rolling.
Was it Judge or Stanton that cranked one into the upper deck that was just
Stanton.
Foul? Okay, yeah. I mean, that was
Stanton who hit a changeup about 5 miles.
Judge is just like, I'm very excited not to hit. Very excited to miss the ball wildly.
Oh, and by the way, Alex Cora's like, as soon as Barnes comes back, everything slots into place. Would that be the same Matt Barnes that gave up 10 runs in August?
Possibly.
And he's pitched twice in September.
I haven't seen your. I haven't seen Captain Worry on Twitter. For some reason, I didn't see you doing this last night.
No, it wasn't. It was like one or two tweets. It wasn't like a whole thing.
John had a lot to say. He had to get on Twitter and express himself.
He needed an outlet.
Right. I mean, listen, it's.
And I was treated accordingly by the many people that followed this game as well.
I mean, did everyone tell you to shut up?
Basically.
And, yeah. Well, of course.
Everything will be fine, Worry Bird. Thank you, by the way, for giving me that nickname.
Well, of course.
But yeah.
That was me.
Yeah. Oh, is it you? Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Angry Nerds.
Yeah. Somebody said, there's your eighth inning guy in the playoffs, Eovaldi. And John said, it sure as hell can't be anyone else. So he says, look, this game means nothing, but Brazier's going to have to face the situation again in about 16, 17 days. He's not ready. No one other than Kimbrel is.
Yeah. And that's then, essentially what I just said on the air.
And then people are saying, your new name is Morning Show Felger.
Oh, great.
Which, by
I
the
missed
way,
that one.
That wasn't even like too burning of an attack.
I missed that reply.
Yeah. So,
how many people called him a bird?
Quite a few. Quite a few as I'm scrolling through.
Can
here.
You give me some of them?
I'm trying. Once again, it only comes up with a couple, with like the top ones like that. Brazier won't be pitching. People are saying, shut up, bird. A simple one like that. So John is getting all a flutter over all of this. So.
But he's got to put these things up.
Yeah.
He's got to be on Twitter.
Connect with the audience, Fred. That's what I'm doing.
That's
connecting
right.
with the audience.
Because you're only on the air 20 hours a
that's
day.
That's right. But then
I feel
again,
the need to do more.
But then again, John, I mean, listen, I can't talk because, once again, I'm woohoo guy. You know, I mean, I'm you know what when the Celtics were doing great in the playoffs.
That's
I'm like,
true. We kind of balance each other out, don't
yeah.
we?
Well, I
mean, there's Fred right in the middle.
I've said it before where I'll just put it all like capital letters. Tatum! Like that means
that's
anything.
That's true.
Like he'll like have like an amazing play. Tatum! Like who cares? Well, why even put that into the Twitterverse?
Yeah.
I'm woohoo guy because when I'm watching.
He's a pom-pom fella.
It is. When I'm watching a game and I'm sitting there like a loser by myself, I want to kind of feel like I've got this somewhat of a camaraderie, so I become woohoo guy.
And you reach out and you look for someone to talk
who's
to.
Who's woohooing
and
with me?
There's just a lot of people who want to say, you idiot, stop.
And and then you guys watch the likes. Who liked it?
Yeah, Tatum, you agree? Everyone agree? Yeah, Tatum, huh? He's great. all capped, which means he's really great.
Yeah.
Tatum.
Sure.
I remember, it's not the case anymore. I was much more cynical at the time that during Patriot games when I was on Twitter, I had to stop following you too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In your face. Take that.
Like Welker with scores. Like, yeah, Welker.
It would just be, yes, with 8 S's.
That's me.
That was me. I'm woohoo sports guy. Like, when it's like a big game, I'm definitely woohoo sports guy. If listen, I've tapered it back a lot on regular season. But playoffs, I can't be stopped. I remember back like in the birth of Twitter. It would just be like, the truth! And people are like, oh, apparently Paul Pierce did something.
Right.
It's in all caps, so I guess that was worth putting in all caps.
Love me!
Well, I said, I can't help it. You feel like a loser sometimes. You're sitting by yourself. You want to have this imaginary crew next to you, like, high five! We all agree, huh, Tatum?
That's the thing. Is I realized I was putting nothing of any value out into the universe.
Well, that's, I mean, honestly, if you looked at all of your tweets that you've ever put out there, like how many of them, what percentage
None.
Actually have substance?
None.
I would say, for me, 20%. And that would all be
20%?
And that would all be plugs for what's coming
tweets?
Up on the show.
I'm just kidding. Okay.
Well, no, because Rich tweets out the audio of
that's
the show,
yep,
which we get
true.
Credit for. So.
So that, like, I would say 20%, but the other of it is just like yeah, go get him. Yeah. Just like I'm woohoo guy during like big sporting events.
Yep. So
did you see that?
Question mark.
Which is
question mark. Question mark. Question mark. Question mark. Question mark.
Which really helps when you're that person who like hasn't been on Twitter for like half a day, and then you go like, "You said no. Nah, what is he referencing here? I'm not quite sure."
Yeah. All right. So, Rich, what else do we have going on?
All right. There is a brand new book that comes out next week about the Patriots. Which, you know, when you think you've heard everything about what's been going on behind the scenes, you get a little nugget or two. We will talk about that. Also, the Patriots being investigated by the NFL right now.
Oh, they cheated again.
The games Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
At 5, the Sports Hub with Toucher and Rich. Bruins hockey coming up at 7:30. Be listening at 6:50 for your chance to score a six-pack of passes to Harpoon Oktoberfest September 28th and 29th at the Harpoon Brewery. Harpoonbrewery.com for more info.
Well, it looks like Josh Gordon made it to New England safe and sound. According to reports yesterday, he was in the building, but the Patriots may be busy dealing with something else this morning stemming from Sunday's game. They are being investigated by both the NFL and the Players Association to make sure the concussion protocol was followed properly regarding Patrick Chung, who left Sunday's loss to the Jaguars at halftime with a concussion. Now, he initially left the game after defending a running play with almost 13 minutes remaining in the second quarter after Jacksonville's tight end Niles Paul landed on top of him. If you remember, Chung lay on the ground briefly with his hands kind of near the opening of his helmet as umpire Barry Anderson waved his arms to signal a stoppage in play. Then Chung quickly got up to his feet under his own power and headed to the Patriots sideline, seemingly at the urging of Anderson. And then Chung returned to action on the next play and then played the rest of the quarter. However, at halftime, he was then ruled out of the game by the team with a concussion. So on Tuesday morning's conference call yesterday, Belichick was asked, maybe we do need to find the audio.
Ben Volen went after him. He did his best, and Belichick was as vague and dismissive of this as ever.
Yeah, Mike, maybe next break we play this, because he sounds flustered, and that doesn't happen often, where Belichick actually sounds like he's put in a corner.
No, he got upset because Volen, as he should have, didn't let go of it. Volen asked a couple of questions, yeah. Then there was a question from someone else, and then Volen came back on and asked another follow up after thinking about how to attack it from a different direction.
So Belichick was asked if he knew why Chung wasn't checked for a concussion during the second quarter, and Belichick's answer was, "quote That's really a medical question I can't answer. If a player is medically cleared to play, then it's a coaching decision. If he's not medically cleared, then it's not a coaching decision. We're out of it. It's a medical decision. It really falls into one of those two categories." By the way, I think that's an okay answer. I mean, he's like, I'm coaching this thing. There's medical staff that are supposed to deal with all that.
Are the medical staff available to be talked to?
Well, then he goes, asked if he received any explanation why team doctors didn't check Chung for concussion. Belichick said, look, I don't know whether they did or they didn't. Those are medical procedures, and some of that is dictated by things from upstairs and the neutral physician, and then that goes to our medical department. I'm trying to coach the game. I don't have time for a conversation with those guys. If the player is cleared, he's cleared. If he's not cleared, then he's not cleared. Once again, I think that's an okay answer. However, I do like hearing him get flustered, which apparently it sounds like he was.
I saw that the play that he left for that one play. The only thing I can possibly think of, the only escape route the Patriots would have here is he checked out fine. He came back in for that last drive that Jacksonville had. And you remember he was beat in the corner on that touchdown catch at the end of the half. If you looked, it was a rub route. One of the receivers came in and popped him before the wide receiver Seferian Jenkins broke out towards the corner. So the Patriots could theoretically look at that and say he was fine, and then he got jarred on that last defensive play of the first half, and that's when he went over the top and couldn't remember where he was.
I don't think that's how concussions work.
No, it's not how concussions work. I think the Patriots are guilty of something here, but I'm trying to think of any backdoor the Patriots would have here.
What's
to make this stand up?
What is the penalty?
You had to forfeit the game.
Well, if they had won it.
Yeah.
But a fine, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably a fine.
Because I'm going to lose a draft pick over it, but a fine.
Didn't this happen before? For some reason, Cam Newton comes up because he just gets smacked in the head so many times and continues to play. For some reason, I thought that there was maybe it's never. I don't know. I'll have to check back and look. But
it's
I thought that it happened before. It probably is. So in the end, what does it matter?
With the Patriots on double secret, triple secret probation as it is, and the NFL cracking down on concussion related problems, I mean, this is not a headache they need.
But Patrick Chung is not a superstar. So this is not something that obviously everyone's talking about on ESPN.
It's a starting safety who's played real well the last year.
Understood, but it's not Cam Newton. So that's why it's not the lead story on First Take.
True.
Also this morning, we're seeing new excerpts from a brand new book that is being released next week by ESPN's Ian O'Connor called Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time, where he writes that Tom Brady felt trapped this past offseason and was not sure he wanted to play anymore for Belichick. Here is Ian.
There's obviously so much in this book. 350 people. It's thick. There's many details. Belichick, Brady, if you can Cliff's notes for me, what has been the source, as you understand it, of the conflict and the friction in the later years, even though they have had unprecedented success together?
Well, I think the first thing, Scott, it's remarkable it took 17, 18 years for any fracture to come into public view.
Right.
It's a testament to them, really, that it didn't happen for so long. But once Belichick drafted Garoppolo in 2014 and said that night, he cited Tom's age and contract status and said, I'd rather be early than late at this position. It made it inevitable, and it happened last year. Our very own Seth Wickersham did a masterful job portraying the escalating tension between those two. It came down to Garoppolo's presence and also 17, 18 years of being coached in an unforgiving way by Belichick, wore Brady down, and then, of course, the way Belichick marginalized Alex Guerrero, his business partner and life coach, and it all sort of came together to represent a last straw. I was told by a number of sources that as late as late March, Brady wasn't sure he was going to play again for Belichick.
Okay, so this book is based on interviews with 350 people, Belichick not being one of them. Reported that Brady was so upset that he wasn't certain until March that he returned to the Patriots. Quote, but in the end, even if he wanted to, in the book it said, Brady could not walk away from the game and he could not ask for a trade. The moment Belichick moved Jimmy Garoppolo to San Francisco and banked on Brady's oft-stated desire to play at least into his mid-40s was the moment that Brady was virtually locked into suiting up next season and beyond, because had he retired or requested a trade, he would have risked turning an adoring New England public into an angry mob. That's something I actually never thought about. So if after the trade happened and Jimmy Garoppolo was traded, what would have happened if Brady said, all right, well, I'm done? Do you think that people would have been BS at Tom Brady? Like, they would have been pissed at him? Like, really, you're leaving us hanging after this trade? Because we know you probably had something to do with it, because there's a lot of people talking that, you know, he essentially forced Jimmy out by going to
Kraft. Yeah, people would have been pissed, but if I'm Tom Brady, I don't know why I would care.
Sure. Well, I mean, everyone wants to be loved.
Yeah, well,
I
you know what?
That.
I got you a bunch of championships.
Well,
and he's pretty well insulated,
Fred,
from the real world.
You're
so.
Thinking like a rational person, but don't think that we wouldn't have got calls. What a horrible move. What
no, he would have been crushed and because people are literally in love with him. I think there's gentlemen out there that are really in love with him.
Well, according to the book, Brady's family long felt Belichick would push out Tom Brady before he was ready to retire. As a matter of fact, his sister Nancy is quoted telling people that her brother believed Belichick will definitely do to him someday what the Colts did to Peyton Manning. Brady started worrying for his job almost immediately after Belichick cited his age and contract status. We all remember that. And the coach's own desire to be, quote, early rather than late at that position when the Patriots drafted Garoppolo in 2014.
He did it. He's done it to every other player on the roster. Why would Brady be any different? As much as Kraft
well, because
loves
he's Tom
him,
Brady. Kraft,
well, I understand that, but I mean,
the Krafts look at him as a kid, as a son.
Belichick's attitude didn't change.
They say this right here. They go, one New England assistant said that the general feeling among staff members around that time wasn't that Belichick's system could make Super Bowl quarterbacks out of all at 32 NFL starters, quote, but if you gave us any of the top 15, we could do it, the assistant said. I don't think the coaches view Tom as special as everyone else in football does. However, Mr. Kraft thinks Tom is the greatest gift ever, but the coaches don't.
Yeah, that, I mean, this is all stuff that's been discussed before.
It's
I mean,
not a shocking theory.
No,
here.
I know for a fact the Krafts look at him like a son. Like if they had a daughter, or I don't know if they have daughters or not, but if they had a daughter, that if you know, that's the kind of guy they'd want him to marry, I've been told.
As far as deflating this book, they say in the early days of this case, Belichick was among the Patriots officials who, quote, had serious doubts about Brady's claim that he had no involvement in the potential deflation of footballs. One person close to Brady said his entire family was miffed at Belichick for telling reporters to ask the quarterback about his preferences on game balls, and very miffed at Kraft for reluctantly announcing in 2015 that he wouldn't fight Brady's four-game ban. It sounds to me as if he's probably getting a lot of stuff from Brady's dad, because Brady's dad likes to talk, and a lot of this is Tom's family.
Yeah. The problem with Ian O'Connor is there's two bugs that have preceded this that have all this information.
They say that the notion that Belichick... you know what is funny? In matter of fact, the Deflategate stuff's pretty interesting, whatever, it's fine. But for some reason, the thing that I found the most interesting is the relationship in this book about Belichick and Nick Saban. As a matter of fact, he mentioned something about it right here.
You mentioned Saban as well. So much is known about their time together. What did you find interesting about that?
Longtime friends, obviously, and in 94 together, they were a devastating tandem. They led the league in points against, I believe, 204 with the Browns, beat Parcells in the playoffs with the Patriots. But there was tension there. And there were two things that Saban didn't like. necessarily about Belichick. One was Bill's restrictive media policies, not allowing assistants to talk, and Saban wanted to get his name out there, which is kind of funny given the way Saban governs his program now at Alabama, right? The second thing was basically Saban thinking that Belichick was too conservative defensively. Pro Bowl defensive end Rob Burnett told me in the book that he had many conversations with Nick Saban where he said, Nick, why aren't we doing these things in games that are effective on Tuesday and Wednesday? And Saban said, because Bill won't put it in the game plan. So just two very forceful personalities. They had a lot of success, particularly in 94. But at the end, Saban wanted to move on from Belichick and Cleveland.
The fact that Saban wanted to be a star is hysterical. That you look at him now, it's like, I hate the media. I mean, he's our Mr. Grumpy guy. But the whole time, he truly craves it and needs it and wants it.
It's like a hot grilled hot dog slice.
You like it, right?
I like that, right?
Yes, you do. You do like it, said in the most generic of accents.
You do like it, right?
You like it, right?
I call him Mr. Lemonade.
Ever had a nice hot dog sliced?
No, nice grilled hot dog sliced.
You like it, right?
You like that,
it's a
right?
Very generic voice you're working.
Could you
with
picture
there?
The two of
course,
them?
Because that's the way we're told to say it.
Could you picture like Saban and I know this isn't the Browns, but Saban and Belichick are sitting there arguing, and in comes Kraft. You like it, right? I got hot dogs. You like them, right?
I got hot dogs. I should have just said
like he's totally oblivious of the fight.
Just in the middle of it.
He's just walking around with a couple of hot dogs.
Popping his head at a couple of offices.
Yeah, like, hey, yeah, you out. Like them, right?
Check it out.
Ever get old? Do you ever not like it? Having a nice hot grilled hot dog sliced? You like it, right?
Indeed,
I do. And then he drops him and walks out of the room.
He leaves one on each desk.
Yeah.
He comes in and he's like, here, have one.
I see them at like a conference table.
like they're in the middle of this fight, and he walks in the room, just stops and look at him. He tries to put mustard on one of them and squirts Saban all over the chest. Oh, sorry.
So I just picture him walking in. Just walking in and oblivious to their fight and just playing down two hot dogs. And then I got a lemonade. I got to deliver. You know who I'm giving it to? Answer, Mr. Lemonade. Why is he not talking more?
Who?
Kraft.
Well, I mean, you know, we heard him bust into that preseason game, which was pretty great. You know, like the concierge, or like the right, the maitre d' at a restaurant. Everybody having a good time. You guys, football, huh? Right. Once again, said in generic tones.
All right, Rich. All right, so what's going on?
What's going on?
No, what's up next?
Okay. The Steelers are hysterical. The Antonio Brown situation from yesterday. Just another thing going on in that locker room that proves that Mike Tomlin has no idea how to control his teammates.
All right, so we'll be right back.
Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Download the Sports Hub app today.
.5 to Sports Hub, caller number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a six-pack of passes to Harpoon Oktoberfest September 28th and 29th at the Harpoon Brewery, harpoonbrewery.com. Go there for more info.
So the Steelers are sitting there right now with a tie where they almost lost to the Browns and should have lost to the Browns. By the way, did you hear that the Browns kicker had been playing injured and the coach, Hugh Jackson, had no idea?
Of course not.
And that's why he was missing all of those really easy and really important field. Like, they could be 2-0 right now if they just had a kicker who was somewhat competent. But apparently, Hugh Jackson had no idea that this guy was playing with, like, a pulled muscle in his leg. And yet, he's out there. So, obviously, things are going well in Cleveland. But more so, they tied with the Steelers, which probably should have never happened. And the Steelers end up losing. So, they now have a loss and a tie. Things are not going well. Le'Veon Bell is sitting at home trying to get more money and losing money while he's doing it. And then you got Antonio Brown, who just 2 days ago, there was a tweet from an ex-PR guy who used to work for the Steelers up until last year that said, Antonio Brown needs to thank his lucky stars because he was drafted by a team that had Ben. And Ben got Antonio Brown paid. You know darn well he wouldn't put up those numbers for other teams, whereas Antonio Brown saw that tweet, retweeted it, and put, trade me, let's find out. So now you add the news that yesterday it was reported that on Monday, Antonio Brown did not show up to work. That's right, didn't show up. Essentially a middle finger to Mike Tomlin, it seems like, and Mike Tomlin was asked about it.
I'm not going to openly talk about a lot of things that occur in social media. You could be chasing that always. I will say this. It's important that we understand our position, the light that shined on us and the responsibility that comes with it. There's been a couple of instances now where you've asked me about Antonio regarding some social media-like things. I'll address that and address that very directly with him. But I'll leave that between he and I. I'm not going to utilize this forum to address such things. I just don't believe it's appropriate. I think that this forum is a very professional one. We got a lot of football things to talk about. That's just how I choose to approach it.
Mike, was he here yesterday?
He was not. No, I'm looking forward to visiting with him today and discussing that and some other things. I'm not going to get into the details of why he wasn't here or whether he was excused and all of those things. I just assume leave those things in-house. I understand sometimes you got some negativity. You know, we lost a football game. There were some negative exchanges on the sideline. There's frustration associated with not playing well and not winning.
Okay, so there was also a report that came out that Antonio Brown and his agent, I don't have the clip ready, Drew Rosenhaus.
Rosenhaus, baby.
The board breaker left the stadium Sunday rather quickly. The guy said, I watched them walk together down the hall, and Antonio Brown was doing lots of hand gesturing while talking to his agents. Don't want to make assumptions, but he didn't look happy.
Well, Rosenhaus came out and said that he didn't want to be traded and all this and that. And Antonio Brown's got a lot of balls sitting out with the amount of money that he's making. And Tomlin's whole thing was he was supposed to be not an X's and O's guy, but a guy who created a culture and, you know, was good to his players, and now that seems to be evaporating.
Well, according to Bleach Report, they spoke with a coaching assistant in the NFC, and they said it's a circus over there, and Mike has no control over it. He said he's one of the best coaches of our generation, but the players have too much control over there. They said, has Tomlin lost every Steelers player? No, of course not. I've spoken to plenty of Steelers who believe he's the best coach they've played for and ever will. And his assistant coach at Tomlin's division said, it's not Mike's fault that Antonio Brown sometimes acts like an idiot. So there you go. You've got everything seems to be going pretty well over there.
But did you read about Rosenhaus?
No.
Yeah. Rosenhaus said that under no circumstances did he want to be traded and blah, blah, blah.
So
he holds no ill will against the organization.
Is that a rumor that Antonio Brown's getting traded?
No, but you could infer based on him not going to practice yesterday that that could be a maneuver to try to get traded, to which Rosenhaus shut down yesterday. And then he did some kick-ass karate.
Does that hand still work?
Yeah, everything.
Everything's great, man. Yeah,
everything's
cool.
Great. I'm fine, man. I'm super right. Tough.
Didn't sure. Break anything. Nope, I'm cool. Ow!
All right, at 7:30 this morning, you will be transported to China?
Beijing,
where the Bruins will be playing, and we will talk to Andy Brickley and Doug Sherratt.
Judd Sherratt.
Judd?
Yes, Judd.
There's really named people named Judd?
Yes.
All right,
he's waiting to talk to us. Honestly, you're really just now knowing his name is Judd?
Yeah.
We've had him on like 80 times last year.
Yeah, I don't know.
You thought it was Doug?
Like, whose name is Judd?
His.
Judd with two D's. Yeah, but there's Judd Nelson, and there's no other Judd in the world.
Except the one that's waiting to talk to us, live from Beijing.
Did you say
Beijing?
No, did I say
Steve
it?
Rule?
Beijing.
I'm from Beijing.
Who even cares?
It's your health.
All right.
Thank you, Drew Rosenhaus.
We'll be talking to Judge Sherratt.
Doug Sherratt.
I don't know. Who's named Judd and Andy Brickley?
I actually have two friends named Judd, which is weird.
Yeah, well,
because it's not a very common name, but I don't have one.
So. All right, at a Cadillac Arena in Beijing, China, and we will be talking to them in just a moment.
Listening at home to Toucher and Rich is simple with your Amazon or Google smart speaker.
Oh, I need one of those.
Just say, play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub. That's not good, then. .985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. We will have on Judd Sherratt and Andy Brickley
there at the Cadillac Arena in Beijing, China. You can hear Bruins and Flames coming up at 7:35 this morning. Hello, gentlemen.
Frankie, Rich, what's up?
all I know is that you were sucking Jaffy dry.
I was going to live at your place this year. Still got some room on the couch?
No, there's no room for anybody.
Fred, that should be the first question, Judd. So are you officially, is Jaffy an empty nester now? Are you officially out of the house?
He is. He's weeping. He wishes I was there.
All right. You guys, first of all, did you want to go to China, or was this something that you were like, oh, God, I got to go to China?
This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Absolutely, I wanted to go to China when the opportunity came available. And it's been amazing. I mean, we've been treated first class from the way that we've flown, the hotels, the meals. It's been fabulous, and I think a lot of these guys have really enjoyed themselves over here.
Is hockey big in China, and are there Bruins fans down there?
I've seen plenty of people wearing black and gold in both arenas. You've also had an opportunity when the Bruins have practiced that there have been some local fans who brought along some Bruins jerseys, and there have been people at some hotels looking for autographs as well. So, yes, that said, obviously, the National Hockey League still has a ways to go, and these are the beginning steps of trying to get a foothold in the game.
And keep in mind, fellas, that Boston has had a partnership with ORG Packaging for the last 3 years, so they've been coming every offseason now. This is their third year in a row. Now they're more involved because it's a National Hockey League exhibition game.
All right, what are some of the things that you guys got to do while you're over there? Because there's been a lot of downtime.
Well, we had a chance to go as the entire traveling party. We went to the Great Wall, which was phenomenal. Absolutely fabulous to get a chance to see that. Something Rick and I were talking about it before the game that was started 2,000 years ago, was completed maybe, 600 years ago. It's an incredible structure and an incredible site.
Yeah, the opportunities were, you know, here in Beijing, it's just a short ride to the Forbidden City, to Tiananmen Square. You could see that. You go down to the Silk Market, the Pearl Market. If you're in the mood to do a little negotiating, Judd, I think you had an opportunity to go down there. You were a little bit more adventurous than I was.
The haggling is part of the fun, just being able to go in and go back and forth. I think a lot of guys had an opportunity to do that, and they really enjoyed themselves.
Now, what time is it there right now?
It's 12 hours ahead.
Okay, all right.
We didn't have any problem getting up for this early call.
Well, excellent. So are they, when you look at this team and where they are this year and the expectations that, you know, kind of grew last year, the youth is another year older and they've got another year under their skates, how do you think they're going to fare with everything that happened here in the offseason?
When we were asked that question going into last season, I think the general answer was it all depended on the kids. And, you know, could they not only make the lineup, but could they be impactful guys? Could they be productive? And you saw what they did last year. You know, they had a good blend of that veteran leadership, you know, the Charas and the Bergerons and the Marchands. And then the kids came along, and they probably overperformed based on what expectations were. That's why they had the 50 wins, the 112 points. Now this year, it's expectations. They've changed. You know, can they continue to grow? Can that young group continue to grow? And if they do, then they should be very similar in terms of success, meaning wins and points. But teams in the division during the offseason have gotten better, and the Bruins now, because of expectations, won't surprise anybody. So now the real work begins for this young group of players for Boston.
And in addition to that, not to cut you off here, because it's in the DNA of the Bruins to defend, and the way they were able to do that successfully last year, I think that they're still going to surprise some people. Certainly there's a lot of hype when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the Florida Panthers are going to be a lot better this year. The Buffalo Sabres are going to be a better team this year. I don't know if necessarily they're going to be a playoff team, but because of the way that the Bruins defend and the character that they have, look out. This team is still going to, they're going to have some fun in the East.
Not that this is going to affect the season, but like, when the team comes back, how long do you think it's going to take them to get used to, you know, 12 hours behind at this point?
Yeah, this is it's an issue. You make a good point. And, you know, when they won the Cup in 2011, where'd they go, Judd? They went to Prague and they went to Ireland, and they didn't go all the way to the Far East. And this is going to be a real challenge coming back. Mandatory 2 days off for everybody that's made this trip. But again, that adjustment, we certainly felt it personally trying to get adjusted over here to the time. Not sure we ever really did, maybe until last night, and now we're turning around to go home. So it's going to be an adjustment. And the fact that there is split camp, fellas, you know, you got a team back in North America right now. They've played two exhibition games, and you got a team over here. So it's almost similar to baseball with a split camp, and that's never an easy situation when you're trying to build that bond that training camp is all about.
What do you do? Do you immediately try to get on China time, or do you have the one watch that's constantly set to Boston time?
Yeah, I certainly try to get on whatever time you're going to. You know, when we came to China, we try to get right on China time, and you try to manage that on the flight, you know, 16, 17 hours in the air.
Oh, Jesus.
If you're going to get some sleep time, you got to try to time it. You know, you just don't wait till you get tired and fall asleep. You try to sleep even when you're not tired, force yourself to go to sleep in order to get on China time as quickly as you can.
And then when you get here, it's the ability to try and stay up as long as you possibly can. So hopefully you're
going to that's fun. We had fun trying to stay up as long as we could.
You know the amount of booze and pills it would take me to get through a 16-hour flight?
Well, what you're hearing in the background is just what's on Brickley's iPod. That's just constantly on his head to keep him up all night.
I got some new songs now because we watched the Peking Opera last night at dinner. So new music.
Excellent.
So they're like performing for you at meals and they're setting things up for you guys?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it must be nice. You're over there in China being treated like VIPs. We get to leave early. Everything is coming up. Well, guys, enjoy yourselves. The Call with Judd Sirott and Andy Brickley is coming up at 7:35. Guys, enjoy yourselves. Safe travels. Thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks, fellas.
Stay pretty. All right, we'll see you, man.
We appreciate it.
Well, I was reminded that we actually met the man at the Bruins ping pong tournament that we were...
Met the man? We've met him a ton of times.
What I'm saying is he
Judd
Sirott's
been
studio.
In studio with us.
He did the live remote,
Fred just had a brain fart. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't. You guys are acting like I, you know, murdered somebody.
Well, it is funny that, I mean, a guy...
It's funny, yeah. I don't feel bad about it.
And immediately we just started getting tons of tweets from people. It's just pictures of Judd Hirsch, pictures of Judd Apatow,
right.
Judd Nelson. I mean, it's like all the Judds are coming in. By the way, it kind of stops there, though. Like, those are the three
not
that are
many.
Getting pictures.
Yeah, there's not many Judds. There's Winona Judd, really want to go into it.
Sure.
Yeah. So apparently Billy Jaffe and I are going to have a weekly podcast based on the NHL.
Cool. How about he just comes on our show?
He's going to.
Oh, okay, good. Well, that's good. As long as he's
no, this sacrifice is nothing from the show. This is something completely separate. It's not entirely Bruins focused.
That's good. And
I'm
that's...
doing it as a favor to Jaffe.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, very nice. Well, I know that Jaffe's got to be elated once again. Judd Sirott out of the house now.
Yes.
Somebody said, "Is he crying like an empty nester at home? He misses Mr. Sirott now that
no,
he's gone."
No, I don't think that would be the case. All right, we will be back, and then we will take you up to, what do we got there, 7:30 is when the pregame starts?
7:35.
Is when the pregame
starts. When the pregame starts, yes.
And then our photography will start at 8 immediately, and then we will get out of here, and I will be able to make the 9:45 thing I want to do. All right, so we'll be right back.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Bruins Calgary Flames live from Beijing coming up at 7:35. And Rich, what is this about?
Okay, all right. So yesterday we had already had a little bit of a strange news break about a fictional character that involved children's programming or cartoons or video games when the Stormy Daniels book, apparently an excerpt came out describing Donald Trump's manhood as being...
Mario.
The mushroom from Mario Kart. But since then, yesterday afternoon, I was just going through my Twitter timeline, and I see a tweet from Sesame Workshop. Sesame Workshop, the people who produce Sesame Street. And it says, please see our statement below regarding Bert and Ernie. So, by the way, that's how every PR statement should begin from here on out.
Yeah, from Bert and Ernie. Even if it's anything, like if this medicine encourages back hair in women. But so making this statement is Bert and Ernie.
Right? This new medication might cause you to lose a leg, but please hear a statement below regarding Bert and Ernie.
You let Bert and Ernie maybe, break the news.
All right. So the statement which was released, and it was a very official statement, says, as we've always said, Bert and Ernie are best friends. They were created to teach preschoolers that people can be good friends with those who are very different from themselves. Even though they are identified as male characters and possess many human traits and characteristics, as most Sesame Street Muppets do, they remain puppets and do not have a sexual orientation. So that is a statement that was released, and I mean, like, what the hell happened?
Well, they have a sexual orientation. That means, but they're men.
No, but a sexual orientation, you can be a man.
Okay, so not gender.
No. They don't have a sexual orientation. In other words, they don't prefer other men or they prefer, women.
Because I always in Sesame Street, the love triangles that exist on Sesame Street are often confusing.
So you see something like this, and first of all...
Hey, Oscar!
Okay, that's right, Tom.
I'm in the trash can!
Paul Stanley.
You're a messy little green fella!
I know you're a big fan of hiding in... things like hampers. I know you're into trash cans as well.
Where is the Mr. Hooper?
Okay, well, he's dead. He died a long time ago.
Mr. Hooper, I'm hiding in the vegetables.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's
dead.
That
ain't a cucumber that you're grabbing. Mr. Hooper!
So this is...
Hey, snuff it up again!
This is Sesame Street glory hole Paul Stanley?
No. It ain't no glory hole. No. Ooh, there's fresh bananas.
Oh, really?
Mr. Harper! I think you should check the inventory.
Okay.
Hey, I'm a dirty... Hey, I'm a dirty little boy. Oscar! Just put trash in my mouth.
No. I don't think that would be very sanitary.
That would be good.
Sesame Street glory hole Paul Stanley.
That's how diseases happen.
So I had to Google. I'm like, why did Sesame Street have to release this statement that seems so serious?
Burn out the RC coup.
Okay, well, apparently...
I have a messed up ear.
Who?
You never read my book.
Paul Stanley's? No.
Yeah.
No, I have not.
I got a weird ear.
Okay, well, there's a lot of weird things about Paul Stanley.
Read my book.
No, thank you. Mark Salzman, a guy who wrote scripts and songs on Sesame Street for 15 years, beginning in 1984, told a magazine called Queerty that his writing of the iconic character's relationship was based off his real-life relationship with Arnold Glassman, an acclaimed editor. They were together for 20 years.
That is insanity.
I always felt that without a huge agenda, when I was writing Bert and Ernie, they were us. I didn't have any other way to contextualize them. The other thing was, more than one person referred to Arnie and I as Bert and Ernie. He said, yeah, because how else? That's what I had in my life, a Bert and Ernie relationship. How could it not permeate? These things would tick off Arnie, and these would be the things that would tick off Bert. How could it not? I will say that I would never have had to said to the head writer, oh, I'm writing this. This is the part my partner and me. So he essentially came out and said that Bert and Ernie were based on him and his gay boyfriend.
Except for everything sexual.
Right, except for anything that has to do with what to...
Except for anything remotely gay.
Right. So yesterday...
Don't they have a gay character on Sesame Street?
No, they had a character that had AIDS.
Oh, okay.
And that made sense because it was in... They put it on in countries where... It was something crazy, like 40% of the population had AIDS,
right.
And it was something that was real smart. But I believe Frank Oz actually had to come out and defend that, oh yeah, it seems that Mr. Salzman was asked if Bert and Ernie are gay. It's fine that he feels they are. They are not, of course. But why that question? Does it really matter? Why the need to define people only as gay? There's so much more to a human being than gayness or straightness. And then he started getting in all these Twitter fights with people calling him homophobic and everything.
Oh, my God.
So Frank Oz had to defend a puppet's sexuality.
Oh, my God.
And gets called out by that. He said, damn, I checked Twitter before going to bed. I knew I shouldn't have. Now I've got to clear something out. I never said Bert was straight. I only said Bert was not gay. Now I'm going to get in my jammies and flake out. Great discussion today. Thanks.
Can you imagine?
So just get off of Twitter. People are insane.
Frank Oz, the voice of Fozzie Bear, is being called homophobic because he says his characters were not gay.
People are not ready for this. We've been thrown into a jungle of just hate and silliness. People, our generation is going to go, they're going to look back and in textbooks, it's going to be the idiot generation that this vehicle to express every stupid thought that you ever had. And people don't realize that the damage that they do.
And somehow it's still been around for a decade.
Yeah, because we don't know how to use it. We don't know how to deal with it mentally, myself included. I mean, it doesn't matter what the platform is that you're on Facebook, you're putting an idealized sense of your life, and then that makes people feel horrible. Even no one puts pictures up of like their kids like raging and breaking window or something.
Right.
And then Twitter, everyone just feels like they it gives them autonomy to say whatever they want, regardless of how that affects people.
I can't wait until, and they probably did it last night. There has to be some sort of special on like Fox News where they're like, is Sesame Street for all these years been teaching our kids how to be gay?
Well, I got news for you. If it has been, and it's been on for 40 years, I think everyone came out all right. Like, you know, Sesame Street's been on for a while. If Bernard and Ernie are gay and you're just figuring it out now, then I think that it's all right. And so what if they were gay?
It's subliminal. It's subliminal.
Well, Fred, you're being homophobic by saying that, you know, they could be straight. They're not gay? What's their problem with being gay, Fred?
No, I would care less if they were gay. My kids know who gay people are and what they prefer. Who cares? Why would I possibly care about that? Like, Bert and Ernie are gay. Okay. Like, even if they, like, kiss, who cares? What does that do to anybody?
It gives you occasion to gaze.
No, but it's not going to influence the way you're... So say you're, like, completely paranoid that your kid's going to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all you think about. You can't get enough
Just watching that completely changes the chemistry in your body.
Right. Like, what idiot goes, like, oh,
the fly. You know, Jeff Goldblum and the fly.
It's like Halloween 3.
Oh, okay.
Remember where you would put the mask on, you know, and your brain would turn into mush? That's when all of a sudden, through the television, the Children's Television Workshop is giving you a case of the gays.
I don't know for sure, but I think that there are books in the school library that deal with that, like My Two Dads.
Sure, my school. I mean, you know, my kid's school has that. I know that's popular stuff.
I mean, there's people that are same-sex couples that have kids that go to my kid's school. Say Bert and Ernie were gay. What the hell is that going to do to anybody? Oh, boy, are people stupid. I don't want to introduce them into their lives. Well, what do you think they're going to be doing? What do you think? What do you think that? Where's the line? Why would say children's television?
Well, right on top of things, did you hear that Bert and Ernie are actually going to be guests today on Dr. Phil?
Now, after his death, it was reported that he was gay. And you were his fiance. Was he secretly gay?
I didn't realize one of them had died. Maybe it's just Ernie. I don't know if he was secretly gay.
Right. Stop for life, I guess.
Okay, well, I mean, but Sesame Street glory hole Paul Stanley, you're still here?
It ain't no glory hole.
Okay, all right.
No.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Who are you looking for right now? The Count?
Yeah, I want him to suck my blood.
Your face after saying that? The eyebrows?
Yeah! I'm being silly.
Yes, you are. All right. Well, I'm glad that you popped in. No pun intended. I appreciate that.
Well, all right. Back to the trash can.
Go back with Oscar. Back in the trash can, Sesame Street, glory hole, Paul Stanley.
Yeah. Gene! Don't look for me.
Okay.
You know what I saw yesterday was you got to go back and look at it YouTube. Even if you're younger and you don't know anything about Kiss, they did an Unmasked special. See, Kiss wore makeup for years and years, and for 10 years. And so they did this unveiling of what they looked like. And MTV, here's how relevant they were at the time.
MTV put it at 11 o'clock at night, like on a Tuesday. Oh. And what was the guy's name?
Jesse James?
Jackson. J.J. Jackson.
Okay.
Is the guy who introduces him. And it's like a picture of their with makeup, and then it just dissolves. And the first time you see Gene, you're just like, oh, my God.
Holy moly.
Like, this man should be wearing makeup. Constantly.
By the way, someone makes a good point. Do you remember when people lost it with Tinky Winky from the Teletubbies?
Yes.
Because Tinky Winky carried a person and a triangle on his
head.
That
was Jerry Falwell's crusade, if I remember correctly.
Oh, they went crazy.
Yeah, I remember that.
They boycotted it. They tried to get it off of television.
I don't know what that's going to do to anybody. I don't know what effect that's going to have on anyone. You know, there's gay people.
Because there are people out there who think that being gay is something that can be taught and a lifestyle that people would want.
Yeah, but you're going to run into gay people.
Like, it's like something that there's a lot of people who are like, oh, all the benefits and advantages to coming out as being gay that we don't get.
Yeah.
You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, all the eating meals, like, in the stairwell at school because everyone's picking at you. Picking on you. Yeah, it's a real great time. Especially in places where they would care about the Teletubbies. It must be heaven on earth coming out in high school. I'm sure you're accepted right away. And these people that go against it and say ridiculous stuff like that make it 1,000 times harder for gay kids. So I hope they're very happy with themselves. Yeah, what being in Nowhere, Alabama and being a gay kid, yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, I made that decision to be really popular. People are so stupid. Bert and Ernie are gay. Okay.
All right.
I mean, it's living around now, you're going to run into some gay people.
Well, in some places, they don't talk about it much. In, like, the places that I grew up. If you are,
well, but nowadays,
you best not talk about it. That's kind of the way it is out there.
I would have a feeling that Kennesaw now is different. Can we play Ass Man like we normally do?
I have it right here.
I'm an ass man.
That is our outro.
Yeah, I'm an ass man.
Oh, I wish we didn't have to take photographs today.
I don't know. The traffic is probably tough.
It's the same for me every time. I'm not taking the freeway.
Okay.
So many asses, so little time. A little tight one could stop me on a dime. Whoa!
No.
I'm a lover of every kind.
Oh, Billy Gunn. Best wrestling intro of all time.
Yeah! I like asses as well. They're super cool.
Hey, keep all standing.
Mr. Hooper. All right, we send you after headlines out to Beijing, China, where the Bruins take on the Flames. Enjoy it. Bye.